Hello, brothers and sisters. I'm Sister Ann Shields, and welcome to Food for the Journey. Do you notice how much the readings of this week are really dealing with motivation and intention? Why do we do the things we do? Why do we say the things we say? Motive is the most important thing. We can do a very good action with a very wrong motivation, and it will bear no fruit. Not eternally. We can do a very small thing with a very good intention, and it will last forever. The reward of that, the fruit of that, will last forever. What is so important, and different readings this week are pointing this out, what's so important is, why are we doing the things we're doing? Why are we saying the things we're saying? Why are we relating to so-and-so this way? What's my motive? What's my reason? It's very, very important, and I think I've mentioned this before in the program. It's very important to take a look at that in your life, and it can be very discouraging because you realize how mixed our motives are. Yes, we have a good piece to it, but we also want a certain self-satisfaction. We also want a certain reward. We want people to think well of us, et cetera, et cetera. We do things for all kinds of wrong reasons. Now, the Pharisees, as we spoke about yesterday, in fact, for a couple of days, the Pharisees were always doing the right things, obedient to the law, but their God was the law, not God. And so they condescended toward everyone else. They looked down upon everyone else because they were the best. They were the keepers of the law, etc. And they tried to elevate themselves by their rigid obedience to the law. But they had no compassion, no understanding. They were obeying the law for the sake of the law. They were obeying the law that they might have respect and power. They weren't obeying the law because they loved God, and it had varied kinds of fruit. And Jesus took them to task for it again and again and again. They became angry enough to kill him. But what he was trying to do was get at the heart of it, because God looks at the motive. God looks at the intention. God always does that. He looks first at why we're doing what we're doing. And so it's important. Don't try to take all your motivation all at once. But you might take a look at, what's the predominant fault in me? Is it jealousy? Is it anger? Is it lust? Is it, what is it? What's the, and usually we have several. What is it that seems to dominate my thinking and my acting? And say to the Lord, I want this motivation to be gone from my life. I want to be motivated to do what is good and right because I love you. Will you help me? My goodness, God will help you. Take one area at a time. Bring it before him. Work with him. Do what he asks you to do. Read the scripture passages that tie into that. Just get a Bible that has a concordance at the back. It'll list the various words and where they can be found in Scripture, and you can find the verses that are helpful to you. Pay attention to your motive. You're going to be judged on that motive. You're going to be judged on the intent of your heart, not just on the external action. So we really need to pay attention to that. Today in the first book of Samuel, chapter 18, verses 6 to 9, and then chapter 19, verses 1 to 7. When David and Saul approached on David's return after slaying the Philistine, women came out from each of the cities of Israel to meet King Saul. Now remember, Saul is the king. Singing and dancing with tambourines, joyful songs and sistrums. The women played and sang. Notice this. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Saul was very angry and resentful of the song. Do you see how petty he is? He was very angry and resentful of the song, for he thought, they give David 10,000s, but only thousands to me. All that remains for him is the kingship, And from that day on, Saul was jealous of David. Do you see how jealousy gets in there? So David had killed tens of thousands. Saul should have been able to rejoice. But instead, I've got a rival here. They're all going to go to him. I'm going to be the loser. So Saul discussed his intention of killing David with his son Jonathan and with all his servants. But Saul's son Jonathan, who was very fond of David, told him, "My father Saul is trying to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard tomorrow morning. Get out of sight and remain in hiding. I, however, will go out and stand beside my father in the countryside where you are and will speak to him about you. If I learn anything, I will let you know." Jonathan then spoke well of David to his father Saul, saying to him, "Let not your majesty sin against his servant David, for he has committed offense against you, but has helped you very much by his deeds. When he took his life in his hands and slew the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great victory for all Israel through him, you were glad to see it. Why then should you become guilty of shedding innocent blood by killing David without cause?" Saul heeded Jonathan's plea and swore, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed." So Jonathan summoned David, repeated the whole conversation to him. Jonathan then brought David to Saul, and David served him as before. It'd be kind of hard, though, wouldn't it? You serve the king, but you know that at one point he was trying to plot against you. That would be difficult. This was a difficult relationship. And Saul was mightily jealous of David. Mightily jealous. Jealousy can destroy. And if jealousy plagues your life, ask God to break the power of that in your life. You are infinitely precious to God. You don't have to condemn or get rid of anybody for your beauty to shine before the face of God. All you need to do is turn to Him. All you need to do is love Him. Give up the jealousy, because eventually what it does is eat you. You want it to destroy someone else, but actually, it destroys you. Jonathan then spoke well of David to his father Saul, saying to him, "Let not your majesty sin against his servant David, for he has committed no offense against you. He's helped you very much." And so Jonathan is a good friend. Jonathan pleads for his friend David. We need to stand by our friends many times and plead for them. One very good act of friendship to do that. Psalm 56 tells us, "In God I trust, I shall not fear. In God I trust, I shall not fear." In the Gospel of Mark, chapter 3, verses 7 to 12, Jesus withdrew toward the sea with his disciples. A large number of people followed from Galilee and from Judea. Hearing what he was doing, a large number of people came to him also from Jerusalem, from Idumea, from beyond the Jordan, and from the neighborhood of Tyre and Sidon. He told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, so that they would not crush him. He had cured many, and as a result, those who had diseases were pressing upon him to touch him. And whenever unclean spirits saw him, they would fall down before him and shout, "You are the Son of God." He warned them sternly not to make him known. I've said this many times, but it keeps coming up in Scripture. Jesus is telling those demons to be quiet, the unclean spirits to be quiet. Even though they were saying true words, he didn't want other people hearing true words out of an evil mouth. And Satan is the epitome of evil. Because then the demon will say something else, and you'll be more inclined to listen to him, more inclined to pay attention to him, until he leads you into evil. That's how it works. That's how it works. We pay sometimes more attention to the voice of the devil than we do of God. And here, Jesus is very, very clear. He warned them sternly not to make him known. He told the evil spirits, he had all the power over them, and he told them, "Be gone. You have no power here, no authority here. You and I, brothers and sisters, have to take a very clear look at who we listen to, what we pay attention to. Because without knowing it, we begin to imbibe and then take on certain characteristics of other people. They're funny, or they're penetrating, or whatever. They're popular, and we certainly want to be in the popular crowd. And so we listen to all kinds of things that we really should not listen to. And I think we need to go before the Lord and say, how am I using the media? Do I turn it on the moment I walk in the house? Or do I have it on all day beside me, now that we can do that? Do I have access 24/7? Does all my energy, when I'm not consumed by my work, does all my energy go to keeping up with this person, this celebrity, that celebrity? What am I doing with my life? You can easily, brothers and sisters, today get sucked right into evil by having a kind of unbridled approach to what you see, what you listen to, what you watch. It would be very, very good for you to sometime in the next month take an inventory. Or just, you know, one of the things I'd encourage you to do, just take a day, keep a pen and paper next to your pencil, and just every time you're on the phone, every time you're on the computer, every time you're listening to something. Now, I don't mean all of this is bad. I don't mean that at all. But what I want you to do is see how many hours actually get devoted to receiving without a filter, in a certain sense, all that you're hearing from all the media, whether it's phone, whether it's a computer, whether it's a smartphone or a dumb phone, it doesn't matter. But all the ways in which you are allowing things to come into your mind. And oftentimes we don't realize that we're letting poison in along with the good fruit. We're letting poison in. We're not discerning enough. I really would urge you to take a look at that today. I really would urge you to pay attention to what kind of food you're giving your mind. Some of it is innocuous, but a lot of it is not. A lot of it, quite frankly, is lethal. And we don't see until it's under our skin, until the seed has been planted in our mind and had a chance to grow. There's just an awful, awful lot on TV, on the internet, even on radio these days, that can eventually lead you astray. Brothers and sisters, your intention, why you do what you do, is so very, very important. Don't just try to get the externals working. Take a look at the heart, what you're feeding the heart, what you're allowing into your heart. Pay attention that you might become a true servant of God. God bless you. As we prepare for this year of mercy, which will begin this December, I want to make available to you a free copy of my booklet, Captured by Mercy. I'm going to be speaking on this program a great deal about the true meaning of mercy, but I'd like you to have a free copy of my booklet now, Captured by Mercy. You can receive it simply by calling this number, 1-800-282-4789.